listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 201 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and on today's episode, we're going to feature a session from the 2017 DIY Musician Conference about owning your YouTube audience. But before we get to that, I have two big announcements. The first one, tickets are now on sale for the 2018 DIY Musician Conference, happening in Nashville, Tennessee, August 24th through 26th. Early bird tickets are just $79, but there's a limited number of early bird tickets, which is different than what we did last year. Last year, we just cut it off at a certain date. This year, there are a limited number of $79 tickets. So if you plan on going to the conference in Nashville, you need to get your tickets now if you want to save some money. Second, and the big announcement I'm really excited about, we have partnered with Berklee College of Music to bring the DIY Musician Conference to Europe. So this year, we will be bringing a version of the DIY Musician Conference to Europe, to the Berklee College of Music campus in Valencia, Spain. That'll be happening April 14th through 15th. Tickets are just 30 euros right now. It's super affordable. We've been hearing for years from artists in Europe who listen to the podcast and use CD Baby for distribution and read our blog. When are you going to come to Europe and do an event here? Well, we're doing it in 2018 in April. And if you're in Europe, you need to be there. Valencia is an incredibly affordable city. Hotels are average around, you know, you can get a great hotel room for 60 to 80 euros a night. It's cheap to fly there or take a train. And so if you're an artist in Europe and you've been, you know, wanting to connect with other musicians and just feel inspired and get great info to move your career forward, you need to be there. Space is very limited. We don't have a lot of room. So if you want to be there, you need to buy tickets now because we will be cutting it off and it's going to be a much smaller, more intimate experience than our conference in the States. So really excited about that. I've been to Valencia. I've spent a lot of time with the crew there. Such a great group of people that are running that campus and are excited to be bringing the conference to the Berklee campus there in Valencia. It's an amazing spot. You should see pictures. This place, it's like out of another world, the where the campus is located. It's worth it just to go there to walk around on their campus. So if you go to DIYMusicianCon.com, you'll see all the information about the U.S. conference, but then go to DIYMusicianCon.com/Europe, and you will be at the site that's all about the European conference. If you're in Europe, I encourage you to be there. This is just a test to see if this is something that artists want us to do. So if you're excited about the opportunity to come hang with CD Baby and other industry professionals and artists, it'd be good to show your support so the bosses will let me do this again in future years. All right. So super excited about that. I've just been waiting to announce that and glad to get that out there. If you have questions or comments, feel free to email me at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or hit me up on Twitter. I'm just @KBruner. Or you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. And yeah, looking forward to getting the conference season planning underway. It's going to be a great time in both locations and very much worth the money and effort to get there and be there. It's a life-changing experience. So for today's episode, I mentioned we're talking about owning your YouTube audience. This session features Ted Kartzman from YouTube and hip-hop artist Illmac. And what they did is they worked with Illmac, who had some success with some videos on YouTube, but his channel wasn't focused and a lot of his success was in videos that were on other channels, and they really worked with him to bring that all home for him to have a channel where he was owning his audience on YouTube and really adding subscribers and lots of views. And so I think you'll find this interesting to hear the story of the things they did in order to make his presence on YouTube more focused and more powerful. So the full session title of this was called How I Did It, Owning Your YouTube Audience. We'll be right back.
everybody. My name's Ted. I work at YouTube, and we're here to talk about a great YouTube channel. On my left, you have a 10,000 subscriber channel, Mr. Immaculate himself, and we thought we'd open with kind of just how far he's come. So maybe you could roll a clip of this is this is back when he was Immaculate at 15, age 15.
So 30 seconds, man. Drop that, oh. Yo, check it. Yo. Yo, call me MC Gravity, cause I'm holding it down. Plus your gap's so big, people wanna stop in your mouth. Check it, if you really wanna step to me, you need to act in my testicles and then check who you step into. Ooh. I'm too ill, 15, keeping it clean. I'm nailing some C in this competition. Yo, it's like I'm invisible to your vision.
You ain't... I know that is that's a young man.
That's this embarrassing
is,
to watch.
I know he's not happy. So I want to quickly segue over to Raising the Bar. This is a series that's on his YouTube channel, and you can just kind of to see how far he's come.
Gunpowder, other water coming soon. Check. Yeah. Who they comparing me to? They stuck in a box, I watch with an aerial view. Pray on my downfall, but that's what carries me through. Can have my slot to the sacred ceremony for my burials through. No rest for the wicked, it's war in the trenches. Tell them I sleep when I'm dead, we torture the restless. I expanded a business, watch it shorten my friendship. Notice they celebrate your failures, then ignore your successes. The last of a dying breed, past of a dying...
So that's right, slightly higher quality. Thank you. You can see the evolution of the artist on the channel, and we did this to show all of you that look, you got to start somewhere. You start on YouTube somewhere. YouTube is your channel. This is a platform for you to take as whatever you would like and to make it work for you. So that's what we're here to talk about, and I thought it would be a little bit of an inspiration to people to see how far you come. But why don't we start and maybe you could talk to us a little bit about how you got your start. Where the seed came from?
Well, with music in general, I was always a writer. Growing up, English was my thing, reading, writing, and it was a natural progression with who I was hanging around, and poetry especially, I transitioned into kind of got peer pressured, why don't you rap? I'm like, I don't know, that's because you do. I just write, poetry and, prose or whatever, but I wrote behind the scenes, went home, okay, let me see if I can do this. And I wrote four bars. I definitely bit one of my favorite, Rakim, one of my favorite rappers at the time, and just completely plagiarized a couple bars and then wrote a couple of my own. And I was 11 years old talking about robbing people or something, just little kid. Just because it was what I didn't have any life experience and it was what I was listening to, it was more gangster rap. But that's where I got my initial kickoff, just being such a student of words into making music. A lot of people with battle rap will start off freestyling at parties, getting drunk and battling people. I was the opposite where, I came from such a writer background that I was writing music and even recording music long before I ever freestyled or battled anyone, period. Which freestyle, quick, background, it's just where you don't know what you're gonna say next. That clip we've seen, I'm like, ooh, came a long way, rocking the Hawaiian Sophie button up. Yeah, then, just the same thing happened again years later where someone's like, why don't you battle? You're quick-witted, you're a smart ass, why don't you? I'm like, well, all right, let me try that. And that's actually the clip from my very first battle ever in 2001. And I told all my friends and family, don't come. This is gonna be embarrassing. I didn't think I'd be playing it live in front of strangers.
Right. Well, listen. Look, you got to start somewhere.
And I accidentally won that night. I won the whole event. It's pretty $1,000.
And so, How did it go from just starting that to sort of starting your channel? What was the vision or sort of impetus for getting a YouTube channel going?
Well, like even that video, that's like well before YouTube, you know, like this is like when you were buying VHSs from like the record store.
It did look like a VHS.
Yeah, that was what it was originally. And so that whole background and even like me watching and being a fan of battle rap was well before YouTube, and you had to like dig to find anything. Like it was even very much more of a niche market at that time. You had to seek it out. And once YouTube, you know, really took over, what happened was leagues started popping up to where they were throwing very organized events and putting it out on their channel. So I'd participate in that, and I just seen that it would spread like wildfire, you know. There's a lot of people who might not even like hip hop that watch battle rap for like the conflict. Like it's like watching a fight, you know, like you're emotionally invested. And I just seen how much traffic that these channels were getting that I was on, but I didn't have any control of my own content. And I just realized that I definitely wanted to take ownership of my own traffic and my own, you know, fan base essentially and grow that. And that's where it came, where I wanted to make a YouTube, my own YouTube.
It sounds like you had help through the years with various relationships, right? When you're an MC, you could do it solo, you could battle rap solo, you could be a part of a group or collective. Can you talk about some of the relationships that sort of helped your growth? Because I think you've shown that associating yourself with maybe some other communities or something right outside of your own group has sort of led to growth. How'd that come about?
Yeah, so, you know, creating my YouTube channel and then seeing the traffic that these channels were getting, like these battle rap channels that I was participating in, my whole thing was wanting to sort of use those channels as the chum in the water, if you will. Like, okay, like I'm dropping stuff over here, content on these larger platforms, and directing it to my page. So what I would do is if I did a battle or something or anything on a larger channel, I would say, okay, but I want a trailer for a piece of content on my channel or a shout out or an annotation, you know, clickable annotation or whatever the case may be, because I just wanted to drive the traffic from the larger platforms to mine. And that's kind of what helped started growing it on the battle rap side in that community, you know?
Yeah, I think there's something to that whether you're a battle rapper or not, I'm guessing maybe some of you aren't battle rappers in the audience, but think about a genre, a niche sort, or a community that is adjacent to yours. You know, I feel like Greg was able to tap into you know, people who like battles, people who like conflict, people who like, you know, to see something versus something else, because that's, you know, that's a lot of what you would see on TV. And you're able to sort of reach into that community and bring them across and kind of grow your fan base. But I mean, I know that you know that there are non-hip hop fans who like and watch battle rap and maybe later get into hip hop, but either way, they like that sort of action of battle rap. You know, it's there's something to that. So what does that mean for you out there with your audience and your music? Who can you tap into that you could share an annotation with, or you could link to them, or you could do a cross collaboration with? And look, you got to start somewhere. You got to crawl before you can walk, before you can run. But these things become available. There are other people on YouTube. I'm sure you've met people here already this week, that people that want to help other artists, that want to help bring communities together or bring your art into their world. And so look, you just gotta kinda ask and figure out how that stuff works.
Yeah, I mean, there's been like several stages of growth on my channel. Like the first more influential like influx of fans and subscribers was directly from battle rap. And then there's another large platform called Team Backpack where it's like, you know, it's not battle rap, it's just people essentially getting on a stage and rapping live. They film it high quality and put it out, and they have a huge platform. So I did the same thing with them, like, okay, yeah, I'll participate in this event, but I need to drive traffic to my channel as well. And then noticing how big their platform was, I'm like, I like doing this anyways. I'm gonna create more content that sort of is in line with their base, because I'm getting such good feedback over there. So that's really where like raising the bar kind of came in, was like, I'm gonna create just the content of me rapping for minutes. Like I'd put out music videos and, you know, they get views, but as soon as I would drop just me rapping for like 4.5 minutes and they can tell it's live or whatever, like it would just spread and I would notice the growth in the viewership being more dominant with that sort of content.
So you're maybe getting more videos on something that's maybe less expensive, right? You're getting more views on a battle or on a single a cappella rap than you would be on a video where you're...
Which has a higher overhead.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So there's a theme right there to think about, everyone, right? It's creating high quality content at an affordable cost so you can keep doing it. If you've ever created a really high budget music video, what is the return on investment in that video? I mean, if you're Gorillaz or somebody on that level, people are gonna see it. There's potential to actually earn back. But most of the time, videos, it's promotional and you pay upfront for it. So how do you create these videos where you're not going bankrupt every time you wanna put one out? And I think you hit on something with raising the bar. Ash, you wanna bring up that, you wanna kind of show that section, right? It's the headline video there, but there's an entire, I believe there's a, you know, there's, how many are there at this point?
There's four out now, and then I got the fifth one in the chamber. But I have a couple, before I named the series, I was kind of doing it on my channel, Lightweight. So there's four out right now. And then, to get back even to what you're saying as far as, you know, return of investment, and like not everything has to be over the top quality. You want to create a certain quality for sure, because that's what's gonna allow people to take you seriously and spread it. But what I learned and hit on, I think, with raising the bar was once I found something that, you know, was showing tangible results and growth, I doubled down on it. Like, oh, that's what they want. I see that this, well, then I'm making a series that I'm, you know, gonna be releasing videos every couple weeks or every week. And when I doubled down on it, I see my channel's growth just boom, you know, because as soon as I started drop two in a row, it's like, oh, this is a thing. Like, I'm tuned in, I'm engaged, I subscribed, I'm telling people
right there,
to subscribe.
That's a point that I'm sure you've all heard about YouTube, but it's this act of recency. It's this act of following up with your audience, right? He saw more engagement the more regular he dropped the videos. Now, obviously, you can't create genius works of art every, you know, twice a day, or maybe you can, depending on your genre. But when you create them and you put them out and there's a recency to it and people continue to come back to it, that's when you watch subscriber growth. And that's when people are like, oh man, I missed last week's. I don't want to miss that again. I want to subscribe to this.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of figure out what works. And when you say double down on it, is that how you sort of created that next series, or is it an in-between series kind of behind the bar?
Yeah. Between the bars, like what that was, you know, okay, how can I just be putting out more content more often, more consistently, because I'm going to drop a Raising the Bar every week or two, but the eventual goal is to be dropping content daily. But, you know, how do I sustain that? Like, how am I able to cover costs or do these things? And so what I wanted to do, I was like, well, let me just take my piece of content, Raising the Bar, that I already did, and then I watch it, like, you know, a little picture in picture with a couple, you know, friends and hip-hop enthusiasts, and I'll pause it and break down certain lines or, you know, make fun of myself here, like this mannerism. And ultimately, like, the fans ate that up too, because they're getting sort of the behind the scenes and able to invest in you, like, oh, okay, this guy is cool, like, I'm not just seeing him rap at me,
that's
seeing
crucial.
The human behind,
right? That's yeah. That's critical. That's another YouTube specific element. People can, you know, look, for years people have been putting out albums, they've got one photo, the press photo, they've got one record. That was the old model. In the new model, you connect with your fans however you want. And it's not, honestly, I don't think that as an artist, you can just put out the record, the one statement, the one, you know, image, and then that's it. You have to constantly connect. Look at the rise of social media, so many platforms that artists are keeping up with because they want to continue to connect. With YouTube, it's one place for all this stuff. It's one place for the featured stuff, right? If you want to, Ash, you want to show his channel, right? There's a hero video at the top, and then there's sort of shelves, and you can add and subtract sort of whatever you'd like. You can drive people to your featured album with that banner up at the top. You got the top video there, and then you've got some, you know, sort of lines that are below. But every time you sort of open the door a little bit, let people in, you know, there's people that connect with you. Think about all the things that you like that aren't just your music. Think about the things you like, the different things you like to eat, or you're a chef, or you're into fashion. What are the other sort of touch points around you that you can kind of tap into by talking about? You know, like, who knew that it was a musician that loved, you know, soapbox racers or something, you know? But you kind of go into some other genre and you kind of find other people, and it's about letting them in, knowing you and you're real, and then people come up to meet you and they kind of want to talk about things that, you know, they've heard you say or do. And I guess that's part of fame that you guys are all going to have to deal with when you all get famous, because people want to talk about all the stuff they see on social media because they feel like they know you.
Yeah.
And, you know, is that how kind of happened?
No, yeah, I think that's a major point that, I don't know if I like read an article or there's just been a lot of different things, but learning that this is an attention-based currency in the time we live as far as being a musician or entertainer at all. And attention spans are shorter than they've ever been because everyone's inundated with so much content. We have so much access to everything. I mean, you can learn a new language on YouTube, you know, let alone all the people and musicians that are constantly spamming and competing for this attention and this currency. And the best way to, you know, sort of create a savings account of that attention is subscribership, but in order to really engage your audience, because even if you, I've seen channels that, you know, build this large subscribership and then kind of are stagnated for a few months or whatever, and then their viewership, even though they have that same subscriber base, you're not fresh in their minds. People aren't apt to click or share as quickly because it's out of sight, out of mind. They kind of forgot about you, you know? So I think that just engaging them in whatever, even if it isn't directly music and they're seeing you, is the best way to keep people engaged and keep the growth going. Prior to me starting Raising the Bar, what I was doing, and this is how I'm able to actually produce this video content for little to no cost, is I have a relationship with this, with my buddy who's Ruin Your Day is his YouTube channel. And he's filmed battle events and like kind of set the standard for how battle raps are presented or battle rap events are presented. But he, in the same way that I thought, like wanted to start his own channel and take owner. He's creating content for all these leagues and these other channels, and he wanted to start his own. And he started it and he was playing around with a lot of different series, and then he hit on something where it was us watching battles, sitting around, we're just drinking beer, watching battles like we would anyways, and then there's the picture-in-picture where the battle's playing, and it's this exact place is where we film it, essentially, and then, but below, they see the battles. And as soon as we started doing that for his channel, I was noticing growth like on my social media interaction, on my own YouTube page, and it's purely because at that point I hadn't started putting out the content of the human content, like showing who I was. It was always curated music videos or battles or whatever the case may be. And as soon as I started doing his series where we're just clowning around, reacting to battles, I noticed people hitting me up like, oh, like Illmax actually a cool guy. Like he's smart. He's funny. He's this. And like, I'm like, did you think I was a robot, just a rapping robot before, you know? But it's because they don't, you know, if you don't give them a narrative, if you don't give your fans you, then that's all they know. That's all they see. And that's all they can assume that you are, you know? And from there, I was like, well, if we're gonna create content for your page on such a consistent basis, and I seen his channel go from 3,000 to 10,000 within a month and a half or something like that, and it's from, he was putting out videos every day. We'd sit down and watch like three or four battles, we'd do it live on his YouTube Live, and then he would just cut them up and put them out, we'd do it twice a week, and he'd have a video coming out every day, you know?
That's so why you see subscriber growth, because there's a recency, because your fans don't want to miss stuff that you do. And so, you know, you can even remind your fans, like at the end of your screen, you know, at the end of a video, I know that you've used like end cards, something that we, you know, that you should all know about with YouTube. It's a way to take what you do and at the end of a video sort of drive people into what's next. They're called end cards or end screens, and you know, just kind of driving people into where you want them to go next. And you know, in addition to that, check out this end card where you can subscribe right to the channel on the end card, right? Because that's the goal. You want to grow your channel, and you want someone to watch your video and say, man, that was great. I would watch your next video because that was great. And that's how you get people to subscribe. So, you know, the button's on every page. Every channel's got a subscribe button. But you kind of have to, you know, you got to nudge them a little bit.
You have to have a call to action, for sure. You would think, even me as a viewer, like, watching some of my favorite channels, like, I'll just watch them or I just go to the channel and then see what I missed. Like, oh, I missed that. And then it isn't usually until someone's like, subscribe. I'm like, oh, yeah, why haven't I subscribed?
Exactly. You
know? I've noticed that, like, I've missed a bunch of stuff that sucks. Go, and then once they do the call to action, I'm like, oh yeah, that exists. I need to do that.
Exactly. It's just a gentle reminder.
Too, you know?
It's a better reminder coming from you to your fan than coming from YouTube. Because YouTube's saying the same thing to everybody. There's a subscribe button right on the front page, you know. So when you guide them in, like, hey, if you like what you saw, do this. Hey, I'm gonna do something every week. Next month in September, I'm gonna have a video that comes out every Monday. If you wanna be the first to know, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And, you know, it'll come right to you. There's actually two levels of subscribe. You know, one, you subscribe, and the second one, if you can get people to go back and hit that bell again, they're going to get every single notification every time you upload. So it doesn't default that way, or else people would be overloaded with thousands of notifications. But if they love you, and you tell them to, and you remind them to ring that bell, I think they will. Let's see, what else did we not talk about?
I want to say also, like, with building relationships, like, that's the other thing, is I can create quality content like this, Raising the Bar, because I was providing content for someone else. And then what we did is we just started trading off. I'm like, okay, I'm going to come here and we'll film, you know, the battle reaction videos for your channel. But when we do that, can I film a Raising the Bar real quick? And he's like, yeah, sure. And so it cost me nothing more than the Uber round trip to produce this content. And that sort of comes from just seeking out, you know, people with similar interests that you can create sort of a trade or like a symbiotic relationship with. Like, okay, I can provide this service for you and be of this use to what you want. What can I create? You know, what can you help me create with?
Exactly.
Create content with as
yeah,
well
I
for
like
low overhead.
That, you know? You've got some good friends that have really helped you, you know, kind of take it up a level. And, you know, for anyone out there, maybe some of you are filmmakers, maybe, you know, your art is also behind a camera. But if not, do you know anyone else that works the camera? Do you know anyone else that can help you edit this stuff? You know, I find when I talk to artists, when I talk to labels, the cost of getting in, people assume it's so high to make a music video. You know, show of hands, anyone ever make a music video out there for less than, how about anyone ever make the music video for less than $1,000, right? It's doable, right? But then you just hear about these huge budgets, like you're using someone else's space. I watched a video, I watched the Morning Breath video, you know, beautiful scenery, and that was B-roll footage, you told me.
Yeah, I dropped a music video recently, Morning Breath, on my channel, and I was just gonna release the song like as an art track, and I had already announced to fans I was gonna do it, so I sort of gave myself a deadline. And when I told that same buddy who I've been referencing, his name's Kyle, from the Ruin Your Day channel, when I told him, yeah, I'm about to drop a single, he's like, wait, just the song? I'm like, yeah. He's like, that's a horrible idea. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, I want to just keep content coming out on my page. He's like, you need a visual. I'm like, well, I don't have time or a budget or whatever. I already gave myself this, you know, timeline to do it. And he goes, send me the song. So I sent him the song, and he made a music video out of like B-roll we shot a couple years ago that I forgot existed. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. And like, next thing I know, I had a music video on accident.
You definitely have some good friends. Hopefully you guys out there will make similarly good friends, because it obviously helps, and it's obviously more powerful. I mean, look, we definitely still live in a musician's age, but there's so much video. Like, when you can listen to a song, and I know maybe you guys all grew up just listening to music, but as videos come along, people are starting to think video first. A younger generation of kids is starting to think, you know, video first. I know from working at YouTube, a lot of people say they go to YouTube first because, yeah, they could hear it probably anywhere, but is there a video? What does this guy look like? What does a person sound like? What's going on? What does that song mean? You know, you get more out of video because of the visuals, you know?
Right. And it's more likely to be shared or viewed by someone who doesn't have stock in you, who might not know you. Like, it's there's less of a likelihood that, you know, someone's gonna be like, oh, you need to like watch this art track video. And not to say that those aren't a useful tool, I still utilize it, but when I can, I create, you know, unique video content because it's just more accessible to people who don't have a stock in you. Like, okay, like I'm stimulated visually and, you know, like auditorily, like I can hear it and there's something to watch. I'm more likely to sit there and sit through the song rather than, you know, start a conversation halfway through your first verse about like, oh, what Cindy did last week,
yeah, exactly.
Or whatever, you know,
right,
they're more engaged.
You're absolutely more engaged on video and then audio, and people understand it, right? People understand YouTube. You send them a YouTube link and they're not like, what is that? You know, like, even there's definitely other music services where you get a link and you're like, I don't have that, I don't know how to yeah. get that, but everybody knows how to get YouTube. In fact, it actually brings me to a piece of advice for you guys. You know, there's the algorithm, like how many of you have fallen into what we call the YouTube rabbit hole, where you just start watching videos and then it's an hour and a half later and you're like,
and then,
right? Like it happens.
Watching why the moon is inhabited
right,
by aliens.
Right, and like it just happens because, and I believe, well, I mean, obviously the video is compelling. It's hard to get up and walk away like you could with music. And two, there's, you know, YouTube sort of, what am I trying to say? Like, well, I guess I'll make my point. Because the algorithm leads you to video after video, you know, and everybody understands what a YouTube link is, you know, you can make a playlist. And so when you send out a video link, you could either send out a video link and then the algorithm's gonna deliver whatever sounds like you or another one of your videos, or you could send out a playlist link, which people still understand because it's a YouTube link, but you're suggesting the next track. So maybe, you know, raising the bar is what puts them in, but you want them to listen to the new record, right? So you start out with, you know, when and I've even talked to artists who are like, you know what, I'm gonna have the same playlist link all year next year. And every time I put out a new record, I'm just gonna put that at the top of the playlist. And it's the same link, maybe it's a short URL, you know, and you go and get a vanity short URL, so it's like, yo, bit.ly/me, and you can tell people out on the street what it is, or you can email it out, and however you do it and wanna get it out there, consider playlisting versus that initial YouTube link, right? And have you done that? Have you made any playlists?
Yeah, I have. Several playlists, like just the music playlist, the Raising the Bars, music video playlist. And when I put like, say the link in my bio on Instagram or whatever the case is, I use the playlist link. That way when they click it, like the next video is just automatically queued up and it sort of doesn't leave room for them to tangent off to other artists or whatever the case is, it keeps them.
Yeah, because you understand that it's an attention-based economy, and the more you can keep people's attention, the more they're watching you, maybe the more they're becoming a fan of you. You know, like, do you ever do anything, because I know, you know, there's remixes, there's a cappella versions, what do you do to tie in your original music, your record with, you know, do you pull out bars, do you do, you know, promo videos of full videos? Like, are there any other techniques that you could recommend to people?
Yeah, I've definitely utilized doing like music video trailers, which is kind of funny when you think about it, because it's like, oh, here's the trailer. I mean, a music video is essentially a trailer for an album. So it's like, oh, here's a trailer for the trailer. It's like, oh yeah, I watched a commercial about a commercial coming out soon. You know? But it's just to like spread awareness, like, oh, subscribe if you haven't, this is coming,
right,
you know,
exactly.
to keep people engaged, and then release the music video. And it's the same thing too with the Between the Bars series of creating another piece of content from a video already that you have for, you know, little to nothing, like not a large overhead at all.
Exactly. So you hit a couple of our points there. You're keeping people engaged. You're creating new content regularly. You know, you're continuing to give people what they want, and it doesn't cost you an arm and a leg. You know, I think that that piece is so critical. I mean, I get pitched on things all the time, and, you know, hey, sponsor this or support this, or, you know, the costs are so astronomical when you think about the rate of return. So you got to find a way to continue your career in a cost-effective manner. And so I think you really hit on something that hopefully people can learn from. You know, and another way, we were talking about this last week, how to get people engaged, you know, how to get people to subscribe. You can go live. I think you need about 100 subscribers on your channel to basically enable self-service live streaming, YouTube mobile live. And you should be able to go live and, you know, you could tell fans on, maybe you're way big on Twitter and you don't have the subscribers on YouTube. You could tell someone off your tweets that, hey, I'm gonna go live on YouTube sometime in the next 48 hours from an undisclosed location. You know, make it mysterious, let people, and but hey, you're not gonna know when I go live unless you're subscribed to my channel. So right. Can you get people from your other socials into YouTube to subscribe to your channel so they're excited when you go live or they're excited when you post something else, you know? Like, I think there's obviously something to live streaming. It's kind of blowing up on various platforms. But when you do it on YouTube and people get to know you or come in a certain way, there's a reason for them to come back. Not only to see you live, but to see your videos and to become a fan. I mean, there's no cost to subscribing to someone on YouTube. So I don't have a problem making that click when I see a video or an artist that I like, right?
Yeah. I haven't actually streamed live yet. But on Monday, actually, I just confirmed I'm streaming live. And what I'm going to do, and I have a Raising the Bar 5 ready to go. But rather than just dropping it like I have been, I'm not going to drop it until Wednesday. But I'm going to tweet out, Facebook out, Instagram out that I'm debuting it live on Monday. You know, and that it's not going to come out for another 2 days because my, you know, fan base is so engaged in that. I know that a lot of people will come through live. But I'm also, when I do that, like prior to even debuting it, I'm going to do Between the Bars where I look at episode Raising the Bar 3 and 4 and then just kind of break down some of the bars and then, you know, debut essentially Raising the Bar 5 2 days before I actually put it on.
So right there, you guys got a reason to go and subscribe to Illmac TV right now because he's going to go live from undisclosed location, possibly Portland, possibly LA, possibly South Africa. We don't know. We don't know where he's going live from, but it might happen. Let's see. Are there any other? Well, if anybody has a question at any point, you know, we can. We got a mic man that's going to help. Jeffrey's going to help.
I think
everybody hear your question.
Another thing too that because there's been stages of growth on my channel prior even to me starting Raising the Bar. And it kind of gets back to what we're talking about with building relationships and things. The music video, Under Their Radar, Over Their Heads, if you could bring that up, like what happened, you can tell that this video, I think it's like the last one on the right on the music video playlist, but what happened with it, like it's at what,
350,000 about.
350,000 views. And in large part, what happened was someone who had been a fan and I had been engaging with online seen the music video. And I think the music video is at like 30 or 40,000, had been out a couple months. It's sort of apexed as far as like gradual traffic. But he was, you know, a fan and someone that I was talking to online who was also a gamer. And what he would do is, he made a video game trailer, and this is in 2012, from 2K12, but this is before 2K13 came out, and he made a trailer to the tune of my song, and it went viral, you know, like, because the gaming community, and that's sort of another community I tapped into, it's like all to the beat and everything, but it drove tons of traffic to that video, because I'm like, hey, drop the link in the description, or you know, title it so they know what to do. And from that, you know, 1.5 million, I seen a lot of traffic come over and even a lot of comments saying like, oh, Shady0018 brought me here, or the, you know, NBA 2K trailer brought me here. Who is this guy? I've subscribed.
Great. It's just a great example of being associated now with a gamer community way bigger than any of the fan bases that any of us have, right? It's a massive community. He was able to tap in. These people didn't even necessarily know who you were, right, or anything. They just happen to like gaming, and then they like the song. So it's, again, like, what relationships can you make that are outside of your current wheelhouse where you can make kind of make something happen? And I'll tell you, the analytics have been unbelievable. 230% increase in views in the last quarter, 190% increase in watch time, 500% increase in subscribers, 3,000 plus new subscribers in the last 3 months. Like, it's starting to snowball, right? So you have to give Greg credit for trying various things, figuring out what works, doubling down on those. I mean, I always come back to, it's a platform. YouTube's a platform for you to create your channel and your brand, and it's a place to send people to watch you. So you get out of it kind of what you put into it. I really feel like there's a direct ratio of your growth, you know, related to that effort that you put in it. You could have a YouTube channel and just put up a video and it might blow up, but you're probably gonna have a lot more luck if you're continuously, you know, farming it. Did we have a cue?
All right, my name's John from Harbor Drive Hookup, and Ted might want to close his ears for this one. I have a question for Greg. Are you posting on any other video platforms? I know when Facebook first started doing video that, like, they were saying you kind of got to pick one or the other, and we've mostly been kind of posting there. And I mean, are you doing more than one video platform? Is that still a thing where you kind of have to pick one and focus on that?
I even had this debate or, you know, conversation with my buddy last night. I haven't done, I've always just pushed the YouTube links because that's where I've seen, you know, the most growth. And it's like when you find something that works, like what sometimes people will do is once they find something that works and there's growth, it's like, okay, now what else can I do to keep it growing and not, you know, as you said, continue farming that. And I do think is once you find something that works, you double down on it. You can also start expanding as long as it doesn't detract from that consistency and growth. I haven't posted any video native on any other platforms yet, but I've always pushed the YouTube link. But I honestly haven't, because I haven't done that, I haven't noticed or have enough, you know, knowledge or experience to be like, oh yeah, you can do both or one or the other. I'm not sure. I've just been farming what works and while starting to expand to other things while keeping that going, you know?
Do you have one more? Next question.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Rob Flax. I have a question for each of you. For Illmac, when you started making a lot of videos, do you get out and tour and perform all over the place still? Or has it shifted more towards making videos and are you more locally based in one spot? Or how do you navigate balancing those two?
And that's a good question. With the model that I have set up for creating content, it doesn't really detract from me being able to travel, and I do tour and do shows. Like I haven't had a full blown tour yet this year. I did last year, like the whole like kind of west half of the United States, and I'm still able to do that because, again, when you do that, you can create content easily on the road, whether it's, you know, even cell phone footage. But, you know, I'm able to get someone out if I'm not able to bring a photographer with me, or my friend just bought, who I tour with actually, just bought a camera, you know, like a Canon, whatever a good camera number is, you know? I'm like, just push the button and I'll rap or whatever. But he just bought one, that way we could do exactly that more sustainably and more consistently when we do travel, whether it's on a tripod and us just getting clips. And that's all great footage too. It's something different. They're not seeing you in the same place all the time. Now I'm like, oh, they're seeing travel, interact with fans, perform live, and sort of put together content in that way too. So I don't think it's one or the other, and neither one has kind of affected the other in a negative way, and it kind of just lends itself to when I create more content and get a bigger base, I'm able to tour more and more people come out. When I'm able to tour more, I can create more content and then put that online as well. So I think they actually work hand in hand.
That's a really good point that we hadn't hit on yet, right? Touring, being in a different place, being with fans, getting yourself interacting with fans. I mean, the cost of content creation goes down. The cost of cameras goes down. You're all holding a camera probably in your pocket on your phone. It's not the greatest camera in the world, but you never know what you're going to get. Even if it's you on stage, you're just, you know, panning and shooting the audience. It's great to know that you interact with fans. It's great to know that you play shows live. It's great to know what you sound like live. You know, tying that back in, creating that footage, you know, the concept of creating footage on the road and then coming back, cutting it up, editing it. But that's, you got a treasure chest of stuff to go through when you get back home and put out little clips or collate them together into, you know, tour footage or something like that. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
Sorry, I'm just trying to spread it around a little bit.
Thank you. Paulie, thanks, Chicago. Great to see you, brother. So I had a new album come out recently, and one of the videos I released, I just did on the DIY grind, and it got like, you know, like 1,000 or something in a week just from homies passing it around and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the next one, when my album came out at the end of May, it got premiered on Huffington Post, and then it only had like 600. So I, you know what I'm saying? Like I thought that one was gonna blow up. I was like, oh, it's in the Huffington Post, you know, it's on now or whatever, but it got less than the other one on my DIY grind. So I don't know, can you make a suggestion? Like, you know, do I continue to share that link? You know, the Huffington Post link with the video, or like, how do I?
Can I ask you, when you put it on the Huffington Post, is it native to their platform, or is it YouTube embed into the article?
They had the video, the YouTube video, at the end of the article.
Got it.
Oh. Go ahead.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I never knew the Huffington Post debuted videos. My guess is you're not getting a majority of music fans going there looking for music like they might be on a traditional music site or on, you know, or on YouTube. I think if you can get a premiere, I mean, I'm not really in PR, so I don't know that I have the best advice, but if you can get a premiere, you can get on a music site, it's a great place to go. But otherwise, you're the PR person and you're figuring it out, and you're, you know, maybe passing it around to the right people is the right thing. Maybe driving over to the guy's house who's got the most followers, you know, and saying, yo, I want to play you my video and I want you to Facebook and tweet about it. Maybe that's the way. I mean, PR happens at every level. Most of you probably do your own if you're able to take it to the next level and pay someone to do it, or you're able to work, you know, friends and get articles or get, you know, other marketing opportunities. I mean, how do you do it?
Well, I think that this is sort of an example that, you know, even getting placement, like music placed on blogs and stuff, like, I don't know, like, it's not that that was the thing for a minute. And now I don't think it holds as much weight. I think if you can solidify a placement or a premiere, why not? It's not gonna hurt. It's not gonna detract from your viewership. And new people could see it, but I don't think it holds as much weight anymore as just farming and growing your own base and having them spread the word. Like something I've done in the past is, and I'm going actually to do soon, is a bigger channel. Okay, I want to drive traffic to my channel, but you know what? I'm going to let you put out this piece of content on your channel as long as there's an end card that diverts right back to mine or whatever. And I've noticed results of, you know, when I post on a much larger channel, even though I'm giving away a piece of content, it's sort of the trade-off for touching new people and getting them over to subscribe.
Well, that's some of the beauty of your art, as opposed to one of you who writes a song. It takes you, you know, 6 months to write this song because you want to make it perfect. You're not giving that away to another, you know, but you're in the position of being able to create, you know, on the fly, freestyle style. So you can give something away. It's not giving away your record. It's not giving away your song. It's giving away a morsel. It's like giving somebody else that you're having dinner with a bite of your dinner. You know, you're still keeping all of your, the majority of it, but you're getting something out. Maybe you're getting a bite of their dinner and they got a, you know, better dish than you.
Exactly. And that's what it is. I feel like that's a great comparison. It's like giving away, you know, part of an appetizer for their a piece of their entree, you know, and because they have the larger dish, you're able to just, like, I've debuted several music videos on other people's channel just to, you know, a music video is a commercial anyway, so I want the most people to see it. Yes, I want to keep feeding my my subscribers and my base, but that's the trade-off of also putting your content in front of new people is tapping shoulders and finding, you know, channels that are bigger than you but are relevant that you can sort of leverage. I'm providing you content. It's the trade-off. I'm providing you free content, but it's also benefiting me in growing my base, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah.
Back.
Benny Hirsch from Birmingham, Alabama. Ilmac, what's happening? You're dope. I'm a music producer, so come see me.
I appreciate you.
Also, I know that curating great content is king. And I also understand how important it is to share or get with other people that are curating with other networks. How important was it for you to use other tools, say like something like vidIQ or something like that, that helps in the background for tagging and being able to kind of maybe backdraft traffic to your site?
Ooh, can you break down vidIQ for me?
I don't even know what that is.
I'm not sure. Is that just essentially the like the tags on the video to where people, is that what it is?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so people search, like keywords, people search and then are directed to yours. I think it's been helpful because when, you see a battle when a fan who might not be a fan of me particularly, but watches battles, sees battles on all my like tags on my YouTube videos is the name of the leagues that I battle on, and I'll put like Ilmac versus as a tag. So if people are searching my battles, that data is also attached. So like in related content, my content is put up in front of them as well. So anything that I'm like related to and have any sort of relevance to, you know, there's artists like, there's a big band, but Hippie Sabotage, and they're like, I've worked with them, but they just blew up. And all my videos, even most of them have nothing to do with them, I'm tagging them on it, you know, it's sort of like relevance. Like if you're searching them, look at me, I'm
it's
here.
Interesting. You know? It's your, again, that's another, it goes back to our comment about touch points and who do you want to be associated with. Tag your stuff with people that want to find, maybe people like, insert pop star here, and you sound a lot like that pop star. Maybe they go over and check out your video when they're done playing around on that channel.
Yeah.
Next.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Hey, Fresh Air from Ontario, Canada. That guy behind me just asked the exact same question I was going to ask. So, yeah, good times. Thank you.
We get, go ahead, actually, yeah, let's go ahead. Ooh, good question. I don't know if I've tried to utilize that to even know.
Get a more techie YouTube type person.
Yeah, that's a, well, I know that you can like look up what sites, you know, like, okay, embedded links, related videos, like, oh, you, because I've seen like, oh, this many people are coming directly from Twitter, Facebook when I post the links, or are just from the suggestion box and clicks. You can definitely track that in the analytics. I'm not sure about the tags though, what drives,
you know, I think
individual tags anyways.
Title and descriptions, that's mostly, I mean, to me, that's more important than specific tags, right? What's in the title? Because that's getting indexed, right? What's in the description? But we can probably get, I'll try to get a better answer for you because I really don't
know.
I don't know that.
Because I think it would fall, like, remember in looking at the analytics, I feel like it would fall under just like suggested videos, because I know that's a part that you can kind of see traffic.
Based on what
so
keywords
I assume
you
that's
put
why.
In.
What, yeah, exactly.
Right. That's true. I mean, you think about it, the algorithm changes no matter what you search. So, I mean, look, YouTube's a platform. You can go in there and start doing a bunch of research. You know, this. If I search this versus this, start to think like your fans. Start to think like your non-fans, people who maybe just like are on YouTube. And how do I get those people who love music and love YouTube to come over and, you know, get into my channel? How do I do it? You know, it's a try it and then try something else if it doesn't work.
Good question. Got us.
Advice.
Got one right here.
Cool. Thanks so much, guys. So it seems like there was a huge advantage to getting onto YouTube a little bit earlier on, 5 to 7 years ago, before there was quite as much noise. And like we were talking about over here, the other socials really prefer their own like native video content. So are there any like, you know, trends you're noticing in YouTube or something you'd recommend to younger channels getting started that don't have that like 5 to 7 year backlog?
The benefit for you is that you're not on YouTube at age 15 with a bunch of shit that you're embarrassed about.
In a Hawaiian shirt.
So you're more mature, you know, for starting later, you're more mature, you're more seasoned. Your art is in it's a little more refined. But, you know, I don't have a great example. Obviously, the people that have been there longer maybe have more subscribers, but maybe have more stuff everywhere. You know, like I have one of the biggest complaints is people say, man, my stuff's fractured. I used to be on a label and then I had this old manager and he has the password to my site and now my stuff's on 3 different sites. So we're actually working on the back end to clean that up. We've got an official artist channels program. So if anybody has this fragmentation problem, you know, we're gonna work on solving that. But now you're starting now where this is already a thing. So hopefully your channel will be more organized, will be, you know, yeah, cleaner, will have, you know.
And that's an advantage, I think, for a newer channel is there's more tools than ever in YouTube, in the app. Like, you can upload, you know, like, once video's uploaded, like, I can adjust it on my phone anywhere I am. Like, oh, there's a typo in the description, or, oh, I need to throw this link on, or whatever, and I could do it from my phone. And also, while there's more noise, I think there's more opportunity than there ever has been on the platform to get your content in front of other people. And there's also the biggest, you know, viewership I feel like there's ever been as well. And so there's more to be able to tap into and more tools at your disposal to be able to do it. So I think it's sort of like a give and take, right, with that. You know?
It's almost like today's, you ask a person like, what kind of music you listen to, right? And most people in the younger generation say everything because they're exposed to everything, right? Even look at Nashville 20 years ago versus today. What the influences were on Nashville 20 years ago are very different than today because of MTV, because of on-demand listening, because of YouTube, because there's just music and culture coming out of every pore, you know? So there's,
I think that's absolutely right.
More noise and more opportunity.
And the other thing is I've seen channels that are much bigger than me, like this older Battle League that sort of, it just kind of disintegrated. Like, it stayed releasing content but took a huge dip in quality, and the people that were involved, it kind of sort of got taken over, and they had a major subscribership, like, I don't remember, like a couple hundred thousand, I know it's at least 100,000 subscribers, and they still have that subscriber base, but because their material took such a dip in quality for such a long period of time, it's not an engaged audience. Like, subscribership really doesn't mean too much if you're not engaging your audience. I release videos with, you know, 10,000 subscribers and have more views than some of their most recent content because they're not they don't have an engaged audience. So I don't think being around longer and even having a larger subscriber base means as much unless you're actually engaging them with the content that they've grown accustomed to or that they want from you, you know?
I think that's a fantastic point, right? If you have an old channel that hasn't been engaged, what are those subscribers worth? Are they going to you? They're like, I don't even remember subscribing to this channel. That was 7 years ago when I felt, you know, like there's really, unless you've been consistent, it doesn't really matter. Start now, grow, figure it out. I mean, Greg went through a lot of struggles to try and figure out how he was going to get it done. He had to associate with different people, different areas, different channels, and figure out how it grows. But it's a snowball effect, you know. Yeah. You might take a year to get your first 10 subscribers. It might only take half a year to get to 100. It might take 3 more months to get to 1,000. I mean, I was just so impressed. When we started talking, he was at like 7,000, 6,000, you know, and then next thing I knew, he was over 10,000. And I was like, what'd you do, you know? And it was just this consistency over week in, week out. So, you know, I think we're coming towards the end of time, and I feel like we have a couple of lessons here that we've come to. YouTube is a self-service platform. Your growth is directly proportional to the effort that you put into it. Videos can be expensive. Cost-effective video is critical because otherwise you're just going to go bankrupt before you get into it. Tapping into existing communities understanding what communities are out there that are maybe adjacent to yours or nearby to yours or something you can cross over into so that you can, you know, associate yourself with them and have those people come in and become your fans. You know, I think Greg shows this, number four, if you try one thing and it doesn't work, okay, try something else. It's, yeah. There's so many opportunities to do so many different kinds of videos. And when you find something that does work, you heard him double down, and you know, you gotta double down. You gotta take the risk when the time is right. You know, the music business is a long struggle for so many people, and so few people find it easy to just make it happen, right? But when you see something changing and when you see an inflection point, that is the time to double down. That is the time to sort of push forward, you know, because the cost of content creation goes down over time. It's cheaper to record now than it was 10 years ago and cheaper than it was years ago, right? The cameras get better, internet's better, your phone, suddenly the camera on my Android Pixel phone is really amazing. It's amazing, and it wasn't like that. You were like, ah, it's just a camera phone, I'm not gonna take a photo with it. But people don't even carry other cameras, you know? So just think about how technology is evolving, how this channel stuff is evolving, and let me give a shout out to Ilmac TV on YouTube. Please go subscribe.
Thank you.
Let me give a shout out to the big man in the back, working the screen, Ashraf, give him a wave. Thank you so much, everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow, 9:30 in the morning, for the YouTube keynote on various topics that you're going to want to learn about. Thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. Just want to remind you again, tickets on sale for the DIY Musician Conference Nashville and the newly minted fresh DIY Musician Conference Europe in Valencia, Spain. Just head over to DIYMusicianCon.com for information about the tickets for you, the U.S. conference, just $79. And then DIYMusicianCon.com/Europe to read up all about the Valencia conference. Both events are going to be amazing. I'll be at both of them. Chris will be at them. And it's just an exciting time to get together with the artist community, to exchange ideas, to learn, to be inspired, to grow from one another. It's one of the highlights of my year. So I hope you go. Get your tickets while they're really affordable. DIYMusicianCon.com or DIYMusicianCon.com/Europe. We're getting to the end of 2017, which means we're getting to the end of podcasts. So if you'd like to get a comment or question in for our last episode of the podcast, which we're going to be recording soon, you can do so by calling our listener line at 360-524-2209. Or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or just leave a comment in the show notes at cdbabypodcast.com. And that's going to do it for this episode. We'll catch you later. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.